March 24th, 2021. Welcome to the Interlock and Hybrid Code Enforcement Workshop. Roll call, please, Mrs. Payne.
Ms. Bakker.
Here.
Ms. Bennett.
Here.
Ms. Costanzo is not here tonight. Ms. Meadows.
Here.
Ms. Connor.
Here.
Mr. Connor.
Here.
Mr. Meadows.
Here.
Ms. Monroe.
Here.
Ms. Russell.
Here.
Ms. Sharp.
Here.
Let the record show that Mayor Larson is present and Attorney Young is joining us through video conference.
All right. But I thought we'd start this by going over the ordinance first. And rather than making everybody read through it, I'm sure hopefully all of you have read it at least once. We're just going to go by clause, by section, and if you have a question or a comment on it, we'll discuss it at that. All right, under rules of construction, any questions? Rules of construction, section 2. Anybody have any questions or comments? Anybody have any comments or questions on rules of construction? No one? Okay. Section 3, Code Enforcement Board or Special Magistrate. Any questions or comments?
Will ever have a magistrate or not? Let me be doubtful in this small community.
It may go to the magistrate. Really? Yeah, I mean, there's a process. Putnam County.
We don't have one here, though, correct?
No, I didn't imagine we're probably on a book. The magistrate has to be an attorney.
That's right. No comments? The establishment and membership of the Code Enforcement Board or a Special Magistrate. Any comments on that?
Yes.
None? All right. Page 3, general functions, powers, and duties. Any comments or questions? Okay.
Not at all.
Excuse me. Enforcement procedures and remedies. Comments or questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
If you look on the ordinance 2018-2, if we're going to compare this to this section here, number 3, on 2018-5, number 3, it's talking about a written courtesy notice shall be sent to the owner of the property. And if you compare it to this other ordinance over here, it's saying that they would be personally served.
Where's the one that says it's personally?
18-2, right.
18-2, section 3.
Section?
Well, it's 4.1, item number 3.
It's on page 4, is it not?
Page 2.
Page 4.
2.
True.
Page 2, six, section 4.
Under notice to remove.
I'm not sure where you're reading either.
Okay, section 4 says public nuisance.
Oh, I see.
And then if you go down under 4.1, item number three.
Well, I thought she'd go on to the next one. It said page four, that's all. Thank you.
It says such notice shall be given in writing, a copy of which shall be personally served on the owner. So are we wanting our code enforcement officer to serve this in person, or are we wanting them to mail the courtesy the first time whenever there's a courtesy notice?
That's the first one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was going to say, can he go on property? I mean,
well, he has to.
Totally trespassed.
There was some question of whether or not he could go. I mean, I don't think that he was going to knock on the door. Did he put it in the mailbox or what?
He could go to.
I don't know. Since the courtesy notice is the first one, I don't see why he's making it.
I would think, yes.
Well, I thought the courtesy notice was if they go out there and the people aren't there, he sees a problem, and they'll send a courtesy notice. But if he goes out there and knocks on the door and they come in and they can dialogue and resolve it there, I don't see the necessity for the courtesy notice. I may be wrong, but that's the way I thought it was working that way.
So it has to be written documentation. Both of these do say written. So the courtesy notice is a written form.
My interpretation is that when there is a complaint, then the code enforcement officer goes out, looks over the situation, and then gives the owner, if the owner is there, if the owner is present, okay, the actual courtesy notice at that point, okay? Because that gives the person the amount of time, according to what we have in place, to address the issue. And then if it's not done, then that's when you start the actual violations where those are board certified letters.
Yeah, so looking at these two, I mean, we feel like if the code enforcement officer is going to be using these ordinances, they should, you know, kind of
be the same.
They should be the same.
And so if he's not there to leave it, then he should mail it.
The first one would be regular mail, and it says in here regular mail, the first notice.
Then maybe we should put that in there.
So
if he's not able to leave it with the owner in person, that it then would be mailed out by the office.
This says on A, 2018-2, the next one's A, that's what B it says that. I'm sorry.
My question is, though,
I saw where they could leave it with someone that said a certain age.
Oh, yeah, if they were 15 years old or older, they could leave it. That's when I think it's served by law enforcement, though.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes. We can.
Okay. Typically, what happens on this is you have a definition of what a personal service is. You can walk up and hand it to them. If that doesn't work, if there's no one there, then post on the property in a certain location, and then mail out certified mail to the owner's official address. It's typically how it happens.
I didn't understand.
It's a little bit garbled, George. So you said we could leave it on the property?
If they're there.
If they're there. Mm-hmm. Okay, and if not, we would use certified mail as opposed to regular mail? Okay.
For the courtesy notice.
For the courtesy notice, yeah. Okay.
But my question is, the code enforcement goes and he sees the problem, verifies it, then he's going to have to handwrite something. How is he going to make a copy of it? How is he going to get you a copy of it? I don't think it should be handed out at that time. I think you first verify there is an issue. Come back here, use the correct form, which then would be typed out as opposed to, I mean, let's face it, some people's handwriting is not very good. Mm-hmm. Then you have a copy for your records. Then he can take that back out and hand it to them, or post it in a certain spot for whatever's the process. And then you also have your copy or the original to when nothing's heard of, then you can send it by mail. But I don't think we want a code enforcement writing longhand on a piece of paper.
That was only after he made the initial search,
That is the
looked at the property, and then he would go back with the notice. I thought that's what it meant.
No, that's what Mr. Meadows is saying, though. He doesn't feel that the original notice, the courtesy notice, should be handwritten.
No, true. Well, it could be handwritten if they get pretty handwriting, but then how's he going to make a copy for you?
But so you're suggesting
it's that... redundant. He has to do it again for you.
He can do it, bring it back to the office, have the office
that's
type it up.
That's
what it should
be, I would say.
And then mail
it out. Well, you can take it back to them. You can take it back or mail it.
Well, why would you want to mail it to get...
It gives him an opportunity to meet them.
Well, that's after they've met already.
No, not necessarily. I don't know. It might not. I thought I understood someone to say if he went out, saw the problem, he would come back, write it up, and then present it to them. He would not necessarily interact with the person to begin with.
But we're saying that's what he does. He goes out and then does his inspection and comes back here and he writes it up and then he goes back out. Isn't that what we're saying?
That he should be doing, yes.
It seems like you could open a can of worms with that, because you're entering private property, you're making an inspection, you're leaving, and I think if you're gonna show up at private property, you need to at least talk with the person and address what's going on. Mm-hmm. If somebody just showed up in my yard and they're walking around and I'm going to be asking questions, what is this?
I think they would do that. The question is though, the actual form itself.
Yeah.
I don't think that particular, he could tell the person, hey, you're against article whatever, he knows what it is, and just to let you know that this is what the problem is. And then you'll be getting a written letter stating the exact ordinance, because it also says on that notice, the first notice, it also gives them ways to correct it. When I looked at that form, so he'll have time then to also go, you can do this, help get to alleviate that problem.
All it says on the first form is that we're not opening a code enforcement case at this time. We're giving them 2 weeks to correct it.
But it should be spelled out on that form what the violation is.
Yes, it does. There's a place there. Yeah.
Well, just comparing these two items and these two ordinances, whenever we get to the operating procedures, it says that the courtesy notice would be mailed by regular mail. So I think just between these two, we just need to decide, do you feel like item 3 on ordinance number 2018-5 needs to be reworded compared to item 3 on page 2 of ordinance 2018-2?
Definitely says two different things. You've got to have to do something. I agree with it being mailed out. What if somebody's not home?
Two has already been repealed, right, in its entirety?
No, 2018-2 is our current ordinance for the care premises.
2018-2. I thought the new one was 5.
There's two
of them.
Different things.
There's two.
One is care of premises and one is health.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it says, no, but
the 2
has been repealed. Okay. That's what it says at the top of
5.
It says
that
they're repealing
2. Yeah, that was 2009-2.
Oh, I see. Okay, I'm sorry. That's an older show. Okay, I see.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
I would suggest then that what we do is we make both of these follow 2018-2. And that way they're the same.
It doesn't matter. You think it should be 2,000, I mean, dash two? That should be the one? Is that what you're
saying? I'm getting confused. Okay.
The courtesy notice, the step number one.
Yeah.
Should it be mailed?
Should it be mailed or served in person?
Where is this in 18-5?
It's on page three.
On page three, okay.
The very bottom, item number three.
Oh, okay, there it is.
And what page is it on the dash two one?
Page two. Yeah, they're not going to be the same sections between the two ordinances. Yeah.
Okay. I don't see the necessity for personally serving it to the owner.
The courtesy notice.
That's my feeling. Mm-hmm. Do you?
Well, it's going to be more complicated because the code enforcer is going to show up, address the complaint, but then they've got to come back and do the paperwork, so it might as well be mailed rather than go back again, you know.
Okay. So if he meets the homeowner, he can discuss with them what the issue is and say you'll be getting a notice from us.
Exactly. Right.
Okay.
I think that's a smart way to do it.
Everybody agree with that?
Okay. So under the ordinance 2018-2, section 4, item 3, do you want us to just strike the words personally served?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. What does Mr. Young think?
Well, you've got two different issues. Under the code enforcement, under 18-5, you're talking about any code enforcement issues. Under 18-2, you're talking about notice of to remove to any type of code enforcement issue or not.
What? I
don't
understand what he's saying.
You're very garbled.
The audio is not good at all, Mr. Young.
You got a reverb in your sound.
Can you hear me okay now?
Better.
Better, right.
Under 18-2, you're talking about the newest to remove under that section, are you not?
Yes.
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 Okay. In 18-5, we describe the courtesy notice for any code violation. A notice to remove is a specific type of code violation.
Oh.
So if you have an issue where there's a notice to remove something, you could leave it that way because you want it handled that way, or if you want all courtesy notices to be handled the same way, and under 18-2, we can just simply say, in accordance with those requirements in ordinance 2018-5, that 18-5 have always more than those.
Okay. I think it would be easier.
I didn't understand this. So what was the outcome?
Okay. What he said was, I think, was that under 18-2, what's going on there is it says it's a notice to remove. In other words, we're asking people to remove something.
To actually remove something.
Okay. And so then that one is handled in person according to this. Okay. Whereas in 18-5, the violation is a written courtesy notice for multiple. Could be multiple different types of problems.
Gotcha.
So we can either put into 18-2 that we're going to handle it all the same way and refer to 18-5.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or we can handle it separately. You leave the notice to remove as the notice to remove. Is that correct?
Yeah. So just leave them.
Okay.
Don't do anything to them, it's just that we're going to send out the first courtesy notice by mail.
Okay.
But the one says to hand in person.
If you're telling it to, if it hasn't been handed, then you're going to go, now you have to remove it. You know, that's then you're going to be the next step, I would think, from the courtesy letter.
No, I think he's talking about if you have a notice to remove it, and he wants, this is what it's saying here, to personally hand deliver. I don't see what difference it makes to remove or correct something. It should still be mailed out. I mean, what's, if it's long sitting alongside the road there, it's been there that long, another few days to mail it.
Yeah.
Because if there's something that's actually like a car that's broke down, that's a hazard, because it may be halfway sticking out into the road or across the dirt road or something like that, then that's something that's going to have to be removed, and that's when you're going to have to get a little further step, like probably getting the law involved.
Yeah.
So do we want to leave it that it all has to be done in writing?
In that hand delivered, but just mailed.
Yeah.
Mailed.
Yeah.
Only thing I want to do it that way is it makes it so simple for the person who's going to do the job.
This could be confusing.
Yes.
Yes, I agree.
That way, whatever the thing is, he knows he's got to come back and let them do their thing to type it up. After.
Then what you would need to do is we would need to take the notice to remove, and we need to refer that to 18-5. Correct, Mr. Young?
If you want the process to be the same,
yes.
Then yes.
Yes.
Okay. I agree.
You agree?
I do.
Ladies?
Yeah, I think that sounds fine.
Mr. Young, do you see any drawback to having the same?
No, and if you're discussing the courtesy notice, is just that, a courtesy. They want to let you know what we're out here and what we've seen. Here's your opportunity to fix it. If you want that sent by mail, which based on the process you're talking about doing, seems very logical. Then yeah, there's no problem with having it done that way, and it should probably all be handled the same way.
Consistency.
Or okay. Quote unquote courtesy. No.
Okay. Where were we?
Are we finished with the enforcement procedures and remedies?
Now we're back on 218.5.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
On the courtesy notice, does it have an area? I have to look. A remedy. Okay. All right. Yes. Okay.
Okay. All right. Notices.
Where are we at, Ben?
Section 6.
6.1. 218.5.
218.5. 6.1. Any comments?
Well, hold on just a minute. Let's go back to... enforcement procedures and notices. Does this really distinguish between the courtesy notice and a real one?
It says all notices.
Yes. All notices, but does that mean the courtesy notice as well? Because we were saying send a regular mail, not certified, the first time. But this one said certified mail in number one.
I think the only ones that are going out certified mail is the notice of code violation. Am I right, Ms. Payne? And the statement.
According to the policies and procedures, yes.
Why wouldn't we send the courtesy notice certified mail? Otherwise, they could say, I never got it.
That's true.
For a few cents more, you might not certify it.
Yeah.
That's a
good point. Yeah. Sounds good.
And I know we miss mail all the time.
It says certified return receipt request.
So we add that on?
So you want all communications sent certified mail?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which is kind of what it says.
Here, yeah.
This line, A, says all notices.
So when we get to the procedures, then we'll tweak that to this.
Okay.
Because if you go on to numbers 2 and 3, do we need those?
Because that would be taken for receiving a notice that the violator used a place of residence.
But we're saying it has to be certified mail.
3 and 4 would probably end up coming out.
I think that's going to where you're not getting any response from your certified mail. Then you have to take your next measures.
Yeah. Leaving the notice at leaving it.
Yeah, I don't think I would take any of that out.
Okay.
No.
2, 3, and 4 are just other ways of doing mm-hmm. it in case you don't get a response.
Yeah.
From the certified mail.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
I think the more we have a paper trail, the better we are.
Right.
Okay, we can work under notices. All right. Conduct of hearings.
Have we ever had any that wanted to talk before hearing?
Not to our code enforcement board, not yet.
Pardon?
Not to our code enforcement board yet.
I've never heard of whether that was ever a hearing, went so far as to a hearing.
I do have a question. Okay, I'm still on section 6 here. Okay, when you get down to B, and then we look at number 1, it's talking about putting it in the newspaper. Okay, is that when all else fails? I'm confused over that.
I think that's your notice of the hearing, isn't it?
No, it doesn't say that.
No, it says notices may also be served by publication or posting as follows.
This is the board that's doing this.
Notice B, though, it says, in addition to providing notice set forth Section A, at the option of the code enforcement board, notices may be served by publication or posting as follows. That's just other options that the code enforcement board can use to notify someone.
Okay.
It doesn't say it's mandatory.
Okay.
I think we talked about that. Maybe they don't give a paper.
Yeah. All right. Conduct of hearings.
That would probably make it a lot more
simplified. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, anything on the conduct of hearings?
I think we should add that the code enforcement board should have lunch provided. just a suggestion.
Okay. Appeals.
I'm not sure if I know what
yeah.
Mary de novo is.
A hearing that starts from scratch.
Or should it be explained?
Pam Glover can explain it.
Okay.
I'll Google it.
I did too. Yeah, it says a hearing that starts from scratch or a new hearing.
Yes, it says that because they've never heard a hearing before.
Is it, say that again? I didn't hear it.
The court decides the issue without reference to the previous hearing. Mm-hmm. Like if we meet the code enforcement, y'all meet and make a decision, then it goes to the court. They won't review what y'all did. It would be as if they were hearing it for the first time.
Oh, okay. And I guess a code enforcement officer could just ask what that means.
It shall not be done. Okay.
Well, it can be put in parentheses.
Administrative fines. And this is where I had some questions. The fines in here talk about $250 a day for the first violation, but if you look over on the notice of hearing, it says the fines are $25 a day for the first violation and up to $250 a day for a repeat. Is that a typo?
We had a typo.
Okay, so what should it be?
It should be what the ordinance says, the 250 and the 500.
So this the form just needs to be corrected,
yes,
right?
Yes, it will be corrected, yes.
That's part of that.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a lot of money for
I remember when we were looking at this last time, we went round and round, I mean, forever on this fine.
Yep.
And the bottom line was, if it's not something significant enough to make them want to fix it, you're not going to get anywhere with them. If you charge them we're going to fine you $25, it's just easy to pay the $25.
Right.
But that's a day, though.
This is per day.
Right. It's, so a lot of days could go by, and it could add up real quick.
And it's saying it shall not exceed $250 per day.
Does it say $25?
On one of the forms.
On the notice of hearing form down at the bottom, the second paragraph says $25 a day.
Oh. Notice of hearing.
Where is that on the form?
It's on one of the forms.
Oh, on the form.
I think we
won, right?
Looks like this.
It's a separate form.
It says notice of hearing.
It's a sample.
Where are you hearing from?
This is right. The form is wrong.
Okay, so it's just a matter then of correcting the form, right?
We will take care of that.
Okay. And it should also say $500 a day. Right. Mr. Young, under liens. I think maybe I misunderstood you. You and I had a conversation about that. This says that the lien shall be superior to any mortgage lien, and I thought I heard you say that was not the case.
I have to go back and pull the case law. There are some instances where it will be superior to the mortgage lien. There are some cases where it will not.
Okay. Well, and it says...
But I have to go back in and look at the case law again on that.
Okay. It said, what we're reading here...
It comes up every time, and I quote the case law, but I don't seem to be able to keep it stuck in my head.
Right. My concern, when you and I talked before, is that...
I'm going to have to get you an answer.
Okay. Normally, I mean, if we're going
to... But I was put out there that it's superior to the mortgage lien because we want to announce to the court that we feel that that's our position and we have to foreclose on.
Well, I guess my concern is that as a board, if we're going to have an officer go out and we're going to be fining people, what kind of teeth do we have, you know, in order to enforce it? In your experience, is it likely that if we impose these kinds of fines that we would be able to recover any of it down the road?
Yes.
That's where you need to go back to your case law?
No, that one is a case by case.
By case,
and I'll tell you why. Typically, if you have somebody who's allowed a property to go derelict to the point that the fines accumulate on the property and you decide you want to enforce the lien, or if you go on the route of, say, a nuisance abatement because of the problems on the property, in the nuisance abatement case, you're going to have pretty high cost in abating the nuisance generally. And if they haven't taken care of the property up until then, odds are all you're going to get is a judgment that unless the property is sold, you'll probably never receive the money back for it. Some of them are code enforcement lien. You're rarely ever going to get that money back. There are times that you do. What I see most often is a property that has been allowed to become in violation of code enforcement, they probably haven't paid the mortgage, or they're not maintaining the property. Someone comes in and buys it up fairly cheap, and what they do is come before the code enforcement board and say, look, your goal is for this property to be cleaned up. I will do that when you reduce the fine for me. In a case like that, you're not losing any money. You're accomplishing your goal because you haven't moved forward with a foreclosure action and paid on the attorney's costs and fees. In those instances where you do move forward with a foreclosure action and attorney's costs and fees, it's just going to depend on the property. If it winds up going, you know, for public sale, odds are you may get that money back. If not, you're probably going to wind up with the property, which neither one of us is going to get. So you kind of have to look at it on a case-by-case situation. But mainly what I've seen here recently, and what we've done for other clients and other municipalities and other county, if someone is willing to purchase that property, it's probably a distressed property, so they buy it for cheap and look to fix it up. If they're willing to fix it up and bring everything within compliance, then you reduce the $5 to a minimum, and everybody's happy. You get what you wanted. We didn't spend any money out of pocket. You may not get a much for fines, but you accomplished the goal you were after. And it's back on the tax roll. So it's just going to be a case-by-case situation.
Okay, if that's with fines, if you actually file a lien on the property, all right, the lien is good for what, 1 year?
I don't think you heard.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I didn't hear that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said, if you file a lien on the property, is the lien good for 1 year? And then it has to be renewed or bonded off? How does that work?
Well, if the lien's good for it, it has to be about 5 to 10 years before you have to renew it.
Okay. Does having the lien give us greater leverage? And is it still a case-by-case situation?
It's still going to be case by case, okay. But the lien does give you leverage, absolutely.
Okay.
The way it does is if someone wants to buy that property, they're on notice that there has to be either one or two things accomplished. Either they've got to bring it up to code, or they got to pay the lien, or in some cases you may require them to go ahead and pay the lien and bring it up to code. But the motive, again, depending on the case, you got to have the carrot and the stick. Use the lien as the stick, if they come back and say, hey, look, we're purchasing the property, we're bringing it up to speed, just like we want it to be, please don't hit us with a stick and everybody runs. So the lien serves a proper purpose. You either going to get the money out of them, you want to get them to bring it up to code, or both.
Okay. And if we got it brought up to code and we just maybe got paid our court costs, that would be something to consider too.
Yeah.
Okay. Any more questions on that? Violations? Penalties? Conflicts? Severability? Let's look. Has everybody looked at the job description? Do you have any questions on that? Anything you think needs to be changed or added to or deleted?
Wait a minute. Before we go to that, let's finish 18-2.
18-2.
Because that's an ordinance. Let's do both ordinances before we
Okay, do sorry. Ones. Okay, we know what the purpose is. Definitions. Okay. Care of premises.
On your care premises, basically what we're doing is we're looking at like large, usually large items in the yard or, you know, all kinds of big things laying around or whatever. It's not the grass per se or stuff like that, right?
It could be.
Well, it could be the grass.
We've got a situation right now where trees have been trimmed and they've been left on the road.
I thought we had a code that grass couldn't be 14 inches.
Not here.
That's right. Yeah.
I remember talking about that one.
We did.
It says.
I remember talking about it.
It's the responsibility of every such owner to keep the premises of such property clean and to remove from the premises all such abandoned items limited above, but not limited to weeds, dead trees, and so on. And that's what we have an issue right now is in several areas with trees that have been cut and just left by the roadside.
But we're not measuring grass.
Well, then do we want to put, I'm thinking about measuring, but I mean, is there a terminology to use for overgrown? I mean, when we've had the issues with the brush store, when the grass wasn't cut, I mean, didn't we just say that we cut?
There was also
stuff
right everywhere. But yes, you know, the only thing is you know, a lot of times you've got like empty property, empty lots. I mean, you can't you can't address that. You know,
right.
People can't come out. And,
well, if you look at unkept property, dangerous to public health, safety, conditions may aid in spread of vermin, rodents, snakes, disease,
right.
And is distasteful to the surrounding neighborhood. That could be sort of hard to prove that was distasteful to the surrounding. But anyway, any such unkept property, do we need to have something in there? How tall is it? I cut my neighbor's next to me because I can't take it anymore.
Not us.
Kind of
not some of the neighbors. Ones that don't have houses on.
Is there a section in there for defamation or something?
Well, do you want to put something in, Mr.
Ask the attorney.
Mr. Young, something. What do you think?
Are we getting it, Pippin?
The defamation section or the overgrown weeds. I was trying to read through this real quick to see what it was covering. So what's the specific question you want me to answer?
Should there be something in there regarding the height of the grass, that type of thing?
I think you should, to be honest. You need to be uniform. One person's definition of overgrown is not necessarily someone else's. My wife would claim that I think anything that's over 2 inches is overgrown, as much as I know my property. And maybe that's just the 15 years in the military in me, whereas, you know, probably more appropriately is anything over, I think, the city of Palatka has anything over the height of 18 inches of grass.
18 inches?
Examples. I think it's probably specifically defined.
Did you say 18?
You say 18 inches?
Yeah, 18.
Well, can't we go to 12? That's 18 inches seems awfully tall.
That's what I remember was sometime, there's something in the teens. I thought it was, yeah. Was 17. I think 18 inches we should do is that's what Black is using. Let's just go with it.
I don't know why. Why wouldn't this cover it? Because it, when you come to putting vermin and snakes.
But you're not specific.
Well, not specific. They say, well, my snakes don't come in the grass. It's just 20 of those.
Okay, unless it's 22. Well, it's not cut short, you're going to have all kind of animals.
He's right. If you're not specific, you're going to hassle. Don't hassle. Just
well,
say
it's distasteful
inches.
Anyway, whether no matter what size it is, it's distasteful. That's what
well,
it is.
Let's put in the 18 inches then.
That's really high.
I mean, it is to me too, but if...
Now you have to quit nagging me to cut it.
No. That's not part of it.
Don't I'll come over.
Take a look at some of the similar ordinances and see what height, see what the county and the city of Palatka verify what they have and see what the county has.
Okay.
You don't want to stay consistent with whatever height.
Yeah, okay,
there.
That's good.
Allow the grass to be grown too.
That would be good, all. Thank you.
Yeah, if we waited until the lot next door got to be 18 inches, we'd be losing cats and, you know, I mean, you wouldn't see anything. My goodness.
If you
that's
let us
really
know,
high.
Mr. Young, that would be good. Yeah, I think it's high, too.
So while, again, like you said, let me just find out what Palatka is using.
That's what Young suggested.
Go what's going on in Putnam County.
Right. Anything else under public nuisance?
Now that was under care of premises. That we're going to research, right? For the grass.
Go
yes.
Around kept property.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Care of premises. Okay. Public nuisance. Almost the same, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
We have a situation around 20, okay, where there's all those cars lined up.
Where the music store used
to be. Yeah, where the music store used to be.
Yeah.
Now, it says here the location and presence of any junked, abandoned, or wrecked vehicle. If there was a complaint about this, could the owners of whoever this is, well, this isn't junk.
Doesn't
you know.
Have a tag on it.
Huh?
Doesn't have a tag?
I don't know.
Well, I think that's what
is that commercial property we're talking about?
It is, yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Unbelievably.
Yeah.
Well, I guess when we get our officer, we could...
Okay.
Have them go out and at least see what it's about.
I can tell you what that one's about, because I did speak with the owner. His story, because I know we don't have a code enforcement officer, so I couldn't do a complaint, you know.
Yeah.
But I did mention it to him, because I noticed it. He said the lady that passed away...
Right, Jean Howlett, right.
...that gave him that store...
Right.
...that a lot of those vehicles were hers. But I don't know that that's hard to believe.
Correct. That is.
But, you know,
she owned a van.
They weren't there when he first opened his store.
Right.
They were not there.
So he said he's working on getting the paperwork to them, apparently.
And then what you going to do with them?
When we get a code, but where
it says parking of heavy vehicles, well, that's not a, well,
no.
that's not a tractor, but it's trucks that says should not park in any residential.
That's a commercial property.
Residential or commercial.
Oh, really?
Except for normal loading and unloading.
Ms. Howlett's estate has been settled. We know that for a fact.
Well, I haven't heard back from her.
Yes, her estate has been settled because we went to church with her, and her property, she willed her property to different people, and all of that's been settled.
Mm-hmm. Now, there may be some that they haven't contacted yet. You can't say we know that.
When I went by one day to give out notices when we were having our screening for COVID, and I was talking to the people there because I was obviously blocking somebody who was trying to get a truck out of there. So I don't know if maybe someone is storing their truck there because they live in a commercial area. I don't know. Like I say, there were two or three people waiting to get out when I got out of the way. So, but that's for something down the road. Okay. Where do we end up?
Public nuisance.
What are we on?
Public nuisance.
Okay.
Should we say any unlicensed?
Yeah, I think so.
Vehicle. I thought that was in here, but I don't see
it. That's what I was looking for, because I thought that it was in here
somewhere.
Yes.
If they don't have a tag on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, what if it does have a tag on it?
It could be expired. It has a tag, but it's expired.
It'd be a current tag, right?
Well, it says abandoned, junk, or discarded, so who knows? Could be all three. But we could put on there not having a tag.
Current tag.
This is a valid one.
I think the more specific we are, the better it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the less we need for speculation.
For owners to interpret.
Anything else under public nuisance? Okay, parking of heavy vehicles.
So are we going with current tag?
Yeah.
Well, you have definitions 218.2.1 junk vehicles. A inoperable which does not have operating fixed for a valid unexpired license tag on which recommend. So you already have that.
Oh, it's there. Okay.
I knew we'd seen it somewhere. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, then we don't need it. What did you see without the tag?
It's on the front page.
Definitions.
Okay. All right. Okay. Parking, storage, or use of recreational vehicles. Must be parked or stored in a required rear or side yard. And several of these that we see around town, have they been grandfathered in somehow, some of these older ones?
You're talking about what, RVs?
Yeah.
Recreational vehicles?
As far as storage or people living in them?
Both.
Not that I'm aware of, but we only work on a complaint basis. Okay. So we may not be aware of people storing them where they're not supposed to or living in them. And we do get complaints, and we have dealt with those in the past.
About people living in the one I'm thinking about is on a piece of property with a house, and it would appear someone's living in it. And it's well kept. I just didn't have to. I thought maybe some of the stuff might have been grandfathered in. Okay, exemptions.
The house on my street, it looks like it's been abandoned, and there's a car sitting there beside the house. The yard looks like they had left some junk in the yard, and it's
some boxes of trash, and the animals had scattered it all over the yard. There's a car there, but it makes me wonder.
Question. Who decided that we were reactive rather than proactive? The board, I mean, the code enforcement?
Is that a legend, a myth?
No, I was told that the board was, you know, the code enforcement was reactive, not proactive. I could understand them not being proactive possibly for their salary, but I didn't know if that was something that was decided by the council years ago and that's what it is, or is it just that's what we are?
Because we are back on complaints.
Yeah, but who decided that?
The council.
So the council did decide that, okay.
I don't know about that. I don't think it's written anywhere. It's just sort of understood.
Yeah.
Because it was a complaint basis only.
Okay.
And we're reactive rather than.
Right. But I was just curious. I was just curious if at some point, an ordinance was passed or a law was passed that said that's what we were going to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think if you were proactive, you would need a full-time position.
Oh, yes. Yes, for sure. Okay, and the last page, enforcement penalties and supplemental remedies.
You know, while you're reading that one, you know, you brought up a good point about being proactive. And I know you need a full-time worthy person, but your code enforcement officer, in essence, you guys are full-time, even though you only meet once a month, if you really think about it. If you have issues come up. As opposed to waiting for someone, which was an issue once before, if they do a complaint, do they have to sign it? Do they have to say who's complaining? Is they're afraid that they don't want to complain because their neighbor will find out and there may be problems with that? The code enforcement officer is proactive, then it falls upon, hey, this needs to be corrected.
Mm-hmm. Well, give the board to you, that's what you want.
What do we want done? Do we want this cleaned up or just wait for people to complain enough to finally, so we just do a little bit cleaning here five times a month or a year? And what happens to the whole city? To me, it needs to be a proactive position.
I would say so too.
Well, like I think Ms. Payne said, if we were looking at hiring somebody for a proactive position, we would be paying them a lot more money.
Ms. Payne, before all this happened, what was the average number of complaints you'd get on a weekly or monthly basis? Before the COVID, maybe, or even during COVID?
Well, since we've sort of gathered up everything, Pam Glover's gathered up a lot of things. I was shocked by how many open cases we have right now. Before, we may have one a month. You know, it wasn't that many. Uh-huh. Here recently, there's been a surge of complaints.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that has to do with there's been no follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had no paper trail, no follow-up, no anything.
Amen.
So,
amen.
Of course, these cases are still open.
They just got ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we sent out, you guys gave us permission to send out the courtesy notices as a starting point for the open cases, and I think it was 13 that we mailed out. It was like $80 worth of certified mail.
Wow.
That we sent
13?
Yeah.
Those courtesy notices that went out, there's what, a 2 week, according to the form, they have like 2 weeks, is it, to do something?
Yes.
Well, where are we with that? You know, because then we look like we have no teeth.
And that, by the way, we need to take 2 weeks from the date of this notice, from the date of receipt.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's a good question she's asked. I'd like to hear an answer to that one.
Has anyone responded to your knowledge? We kind of didn't want to come to work the next day because we were like, our doors are going to be so busy, but we haven't heard from anybody.
Okay.
That was well over a week ago. Have we got any cards back, Pam?
Mm-hmm.
We have been getting cards back, but we haven't heard from anybody.
One letter return.
That was a bad address, yeah.
Well, it doesn't make much sense to pursue it now because we don't have a code enforcement officer to present the case if it had to go to that point.
Well, we were hoping this would be a starting point, and they would have already been given the 30-day note, the 30-day courtesy notice, and then by the time all this is kind of ironed out and we have a code enforcement officer, we would be in step two.
But
do we have to wait to have an officer before we can proceed with any of this? I mean, if we've already got things started, why can't we follow up with some of the, at least the paperwork?
Well, who, are you going to stand there and witness against the person? I mean, you need a code enforcement to make the case. That's seen it, taking pictures. And
I think in the past, Pam, didn't they appoint a council person as an acting, a temporary acting code enforcement officer?
We can.
In the past, they've done that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you say a council member? I thought we said an office, somebody in the office.
In the past, they had appointed a council member to do that. I guess that would be up to the council to decide who to appoint.
Can we go out as a team?
Well, we got one person absent.
Yeah.
She's a former police officer.
Law enforcement officer. She's got skills.
There you go.
All right. I don't know if that's something we can decide tonight.
You can't.
I think we need to ask
the
attorney that question.
I'm sorry?
I think we need to ask him that question. Can we go ahead and proceed with past cases, even though we don't have a code enforcement officer?
Mr. Young?
The question is whether or not we can bring code enforcement issues before the board without a code enforcement officer?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Is that the question?
Yes.
According to the ordinance now.
Okay.
According to the ordinance.
According to the ordinance, you have to have the code enforcement officer to make the case in front of the board.
I read that the council can appoint an interim code enforcement officer.
Okay, so that's what
the town council board would really to be an administrative personnel.
Either or.
Okay.
Then do we need that as part of this? In the absence of a code enforcement officer, we need something in writing that says that we could appoint a temporary code enforcement officer, because we have absolutely nothing in writing.
Yeah, well, he's saying you can do that. So,
I know, but we need it in writing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Would you need to add that?
George, would you put that in the ordinance? Should we put that in the ordinance?
Yeah, that would go in, what is it, 18-5 code enforcement?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would have a paragraph name that says, in the absence of the full-time or part-time code enforcement officer, the town may appoint administrative personnel or other duly qualified individual as interim code enforcement officer. And they're authorized to fulfill the same duties as the regular code enforcement officer until such code enforcement officer position can be filled.
That would go under Section 5, probably, because it's enforcement procedures.
Yeah. That's a good place, isn't it?
Page 3.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking, too.
Pardon?
That's what I was thinking, too. Yeah. Make it a number 4. Enforcement officer 2 and 3. Then, if you don't, number 4.
But number 1, when it says forwarded to the CEO, or you could put on there, or the appointed, temporarily appointed, or whatever, just add it onto that first number 1. Or interim.
I just see it at the end. But it could be either way, I'm sorry.
Okay. Conflict?
Conflicts.
All right, severability? Go to the job description. Any questions? Any changes? And the CEO does report to the town council and the code enforcement board. Jean, you weren't sure at one time.
I think when we finally, when we have someone on board, it has to be made very, very clear what their duties are this time, and that we have a file cabinet here at Town Hall, and exactly the paper trail, how it needs to be set up. There needs to be files on each case.
When we get to his contract, we've got a lot of notes on that.
Yeah.
Okay. Any questions, changes, or additions to the job description?
Well, it says in here that report, that person reports to the town council, the code enforcement board. But I know Jean was hesitant, as well as you, talking directly to that guy. For whatever reason, I never saw this before. No, when it says he reports, does that mean we can talk to the guy? Or if there's a sunshine law involvement in here?
But what us? If I don't know, on an individual basis, Mr. Young?
I mean, do you have to
speak up louder, I can hear you.
Where it says that the code enforcement officer reports to the town council and the code enforcement board, does that mean that as a council member we could talk to the officer on our own about an issue, or does it need to come before the council?
Obviously, the code enforcement officer should report to the town clerk, or typically they would report to your city manager. You don't have that structure here, so the town clerk is the next viable option. That means you should probably supervise, and they should report to you. The council members individually can only speak with the code enforcement officer, and as far as giving direction and that kind of stuff, that really should be done through public meetings and directed to the child clerk.
Would that also apply to
the conversations that the code enforcement officer has with the code enforcement board should probably be restricted to public meetings, because what he's doing is presenting a case to the board. And they need to hear that in the sunshine law, all as a group to make a decision, not individually gather information other than, investigator type information. So, in my opinion, administratively, we should report to the town clerk, get his direction from the town clerk, his direction or his direction from the town council.
So
that's the administrative side. The other side, of course, is the case is presented to the code enforcement board, but all that should be presented at one time in the sunshine law at a public meeting.
So, bottom line is what I told you a long time ago. I thought that the town clerk should supervise that person, using the word supervise, versus if he reports to you, obviously you're supervising him too at that same point.
Well, I wouldn't say supervise because he or she would be a subcontractor, right. So you can't really say supervise, but yeah, I mean...
But someone's got to keep track of that he's doing the job.
Right.
And so...
And I think with the reports that, we plan on asking this person for, I think will help kind of have a little follow-up. And have, I mean, we have this sample here that we'll get to and we'll talk about that, but I think we have some better procedures in place to kind of know where we stand with each case.
My issue with this whole thing was when I talked to her about it one time, no one knew who to talk to him because they're afraid of the sunshine law. And I said, I thought you should be able to. So basically, I'm saying to you now, you're able to talk to him. If one of them came to you and said, maybe this person should do this, then you'd be the one that would tell that code enforcement officer to do it.
I approached Mr. Rogers, okay, I did call him,
yeah.
But what I did was I just found out where he stood, and then I went directly to Ms. Payne and said, we need to put this on the agenda for all of us, because I didn't want to get in trouble, for all of us to know what was going on,
right.
And then take it from there. So that's how we handled that.
Yeah, okay.
So does that mean that we would change it to Ms. Payne to say he reports to the town clerk?
Mm-hmm.
And,
just
and time. On the same thing on the back under working conditions, we would change that.
On the back?
On the very back, it's a working condition report to the town council and the code enforcement board.
Yeah.
So
the same thing.
So that's going to say town clerk as well. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Well, is that two separate issues here. I want to make sure we distinguish between the two. Administratively, he has to have someone the answers to you on a daily basis so that you can ensure the code enforcement officer is doing his job. And so he needs to get direction from the town council, and typically how you get day-to-day direction is through your town clerk. Mm-hmm. Now, he can be required to make reports to the town council on a regular basis, which is probably not a bad idea. And he can still get direction from the code enforcement board via the code enforcement meeting. If they have a case before the board and the code enforcement board says, look, we want more information, or we believe you should re-notice this person, or whatever it is, they can give him that direction at the code enforcement board. So you want to make sure you distinguish those two categories. There's no sunshine violation for a council member to approach the code enforcement officer and have a discussion with it. There's not a problem there. Same with the code enforcement member. If it's just one-on-one, you know, it doesn't involve other members of the board of the council. For fact-finding information, that's fine. But when it comes to giving direction, the town council can give him direction because he's an employee. But typically, that's done at a meeting or through the town clerk. Mm-hmm. Code enforcement board can give me direction to follow up on any case that's before them. And they can do that directly at the code enforcement board. So from a day-to-day supervision to ensure that the policies and procedures you won't follow by the code enforcement officer, typically that would go through your town clerk. Does that all make sense? You bet I can use this whole thing. Yeah.
So would you say administratively reports to the town clerk?
Yes.
And then the monthly reports would go to the town council?
Mm-hmm. So we're
going to... Yeah, required to give whatever you want, whether it be monthly reports, quarterly reports, whatever it is, to the town council, or as required. Yeah, the town council may not want to hear from him every month, but they probably do. And they certainly can give him direction at that time at that meeting.
Well, that's some of what we're going to bring up.
And obviously, you can give him direction anytime he brings something before the code enforcement board.
Okay.
That's what we're going to be bringing up next, and that will cover a lot of that, Mr. Young. Well, I guess, Ms.
Can I answer a question?
Yeah.
Mr. Young, here's the situation. If I want to apply for to be the code enforcement officer, could I do that though my wife's on the council?
No.
Would that be a violation of sunshine law?
Not a sunshine law. It'd be a violation of
nepotism.
Nepotism, most likely.
Okay.
How about if we were divorced?
That's a divorce.
For the same reason we no longer legally represent any issue at the county. Once my wife became the deputy county, whatever they're called, director that even though I didn't work for Reverend Porter or necessarily answer to her, that any legal advice I gave or anything I handled on their behalf, that there was direct communication between the two of us, and which wouldn't be appropriate. You have the same issue here. Even though you would be a contract employee and administratively you would be answering to the town clerk, the town council could still give you direction on what to do, and that way live your life. So, in my opinion, you have a nepotism issue, but more importantly, you have a perception issue that the town does not want.
Okay.
And that is something that if someone ever wants to use the persecution defense for being targeted by code enforcement, and they brought that issue up, it'd be very hard to defend one in the public arena and two before the circuit court.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Ms. Payne, you're going to change who the reporting that...
I will, and I do have a suggestion. Under the essential functions, it says that about halfway down, it says he provides a monthly report to the town council, and it's due by the first of each month. Mm-hmm. In the past, with the past couple of code enforcement officers that we have, it always comes in after the agenda deadline. I would move that to the agenda deadline so that it's in your packet and it's prepared.
So we wanted to say a time written report.
Okay.
Of course, we're talking about that form, so
yeah.
That
well, we've got some issues that we'll bring up now. We'll cover a lot of that.
I mean, looking through this job description, everything looked good. I mean, I would just change that because mm-hmm. it lays it all out really clear.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to see each of his reports be accompanied by a photograph of the complaint. And with digital cameras today, it's a piece of cake to do it. I'd also like to see him each month give us a status report on each complaint, how many closed, how many ongoing, how many passed their correction date, etc. The report should be typed and attached to our monthly agenda. I'd like to see him attend council meetings and give a report if requested. We would do it the same way we do the other department heads. Let me go ahead and read the other notes. I think he needs to have a badge and signs for his vehicle. I think he needs a pay raise. And whose number do we give out, and does he give out his own number?
That was one thing I was going to mention about a cell phone. I would not want, if it was personally use my cell phone, mm-hmm. to start getting phone calls at 12:30 at night from people who's irate because now they just finally read this thing that was stuck in the box. Well, so either this number, that's why I circle this on this notice, either he has his own, or if you provide him with a cell phone, or you put the town hall's number.
It is, and that is on one of the forms.
That is the town's
number.
I remember the number that was.
Here it is.
I think that was Mr. Rogers.
The courtesy notice, that's the town's number on the bottom.
I'm looking at the courtesy notice. It says, if you have any questions regarding the issue, contact me at 865-274-0471.
That's the office. That's the town.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No. That's not.
That's not the town.
I guess I thought I looked it up.
But that's going back to being a subcontractor and supplying your tools for your job.
Does it say in here that he has to provide?
It does actually say that somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, my apologies. I thought it was. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're going to change that to put the town.
Wait a minute.
Ms. Payne said that's part of his tools that he should be providing for the job.
Well, I have to agree with Mr. Meadows, though.
I guess it says it should be either shall be responsible for his equipment, transportation, mm-hmm. insurance, and all other expenses in connection with the finishing of his work. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
wouldn't they need some, you mentioned taking pictures. would need a camera.
No, no.
He has a camera on his phone now. Or maybe he doesn't want to use his own phone.
Well, that would be, that's going to be part, that's what, in my opinion, would be part of his employment. I mean,
yeah, but he can take a picture and he can download it.
Yeah, it's nothing, it's no cost or anything.
Yeah. I don't know how to do that, but you're telling me.
In my opinion, he thinks that is subject to the public records request. So if there's not a provision in there or warning to him, if you don't provide it on the cell phone for him, you don't provide some type of warning or provision whereby he obtains a second phone and he uses his personal phone, then it is subject to public records request as well, and or subpoena, and or seizure by law enforcement.
That's not a case
of
a phone. In which case, you want a personal phone to that issue.
Yes, Ms. Lover?
Should we provide him with a phone?
Sound like it.
Yeah, track phone.
Yeah.
You need to take pictures with that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Separate from the personal.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to have to use my personal phone for that.
Well, the only reason I wouldn't want to is because you said about public records.
Yeah.
Other than that, I would,
and it
wouldn't bother
it.
Me.
Yeah.
Right.
And he has the ability to, at an appropriate time, turn that track phone off.
Right.
You know, for the night, so that he's not getting phone calls, you know, during the middle of the night from an irate person.
So where should that go under?
Well, we have phones that we could issue that's sort of like a backup phone for some of our employees, but it's a flip phone, so it's not going to be a good camera. So would you want us to issue him a phone that we have on hand and then provide a camera also? Or would you rather buy a phone that's more like a smartphone that has a decent camera that's going to be, you know, quality pictures?
That's what I think, yeah.
I'd rather see a smartphone myself. Okay.
And if you have a track phone around for 1 year, $125 for a year.
For a track phone?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
If you buy that plan.
So the town will provide a phone with a camera.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think that's fair.
I do too.
And the other, we talked about that we wanted all the notices and letters sent out, typed by the office and sent out. And, you know, he came in once a week and signed the letters. I mean, we don't want to put undue burden on him. But am I right? When you got whatever letters he had to have signed, you could let him know and they could be signed once or twice a week?
Oh, to go out, like the courtesy notices and stuff? You want us to do that in the office?
I thought that's what we had said earlier. We were going to have everything, all the notices were going to be sent out, certified mail by the office, okay? And also the office would maintain the files.
Mm-hmm.
And by maintaining, keeping them in date order, and any backup or anything that would need to be done to them, the overall maintenance of them.
Okay.
Does any of that information that you just said about him having pictures, taking pictures and all, does that need to be in?
I think so. When we get our report, whatever the complaint is, I'd like to see what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all would.
Does it need to be in here anywhere?
I think it needs.
Well, that's what I was saying. All of these little notes that I just mentioned, we want to make part of his either his job description or under his contract.
Right.
Or the operating procedures.
Right.
Operating procedures, yeah.
How do you all feel about increasing the salary to $400 a month?
I think you're going to almost have to if you're going to ask more things.
Well, not only that, but, you know, he's using his own gas, and hopefully, if he's doing everything the way it should be done, he's going to be spending some time driving. And with the way gas is going up,
well, but again, and I'll take the other side, because I have my own business, and I'm an independent contractor for many, many years. And, you know, there's so many deductions that you can get as an independent contractor that gas is one of them.
Right.
You know, and that's a big expense.
That's assuming that you know, whoever's going to be doing this would look at it like that. I'm just thinking that for the other things that we're going to be putting on them, that
it seems to me that the increase would only be right in speaking.
Sounds like you're asking him to make reports more frequently and asking him to take pictures and things like that. It looks like you're putting more on him.
Mm-hmm. I mean, taking the pictures with these phones is a piece of cake. I mean, that's not a burden at all. The only additional burden that I see is in having to come into the office more frequently, okay, and to, maybe a little bit more paperwork involved and to attend the meetings.
Well, the pictures they take with the phone, they have to be printed out so they can be...
No. You just send them out. You could send it to me and I could download it and print it out at home.
Like I said, they have to be printed to be attached to this report.
Well, yeah, but that's not, they don't have to be printed at CVS. They're just printed off the computer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do.
Not like the old days.
I have a feeling there's going to be more complaints. That person's going to be responding to in the near future.
I'm sorry?
I think there's going to be a lot more complaints that person's going to be responding to in the near future, whoever gets hired on. Seems like there's been a pent up something going on for this last year.
Anybody else? Does anybody have a problem with the 400?
And of course, he has to be at the meetings.
Right. And I think it's important. That way, if something comes up and we want to talk about an issue, he's here.
Ms. Payne, when you advertise that job, do you advertise the salary? Because I'm thinking maybe you get a better quality person if it's 400 instead of 300, but I may be wrong about that.
We don't advertise the salary when we advertise that position.
I wouldn't think you'd have to on something like this part-time contract.
Well, usually if someone's interested, they'll call.
Get the information.
Yeah, I don't think we should advertise the salary. Not for a part-time contract.
Okay. Is it necessary for him to have business cards?
It wouldn't hurt.
Well, I think it's professional.
That would be more professional.
Yes.
Okay. Ms. Glover makes them for the town.
Oh, okay. And then I think he should have them. And a badge. And a sign for a car. Well, those are all the things that I wanted to say. Does anybody have anything else they'd like to
add? Mr.
Larson
could make him a badge. Mr. Larson could make him a badge.
And a sign?
And a sign. A magnetic sign.
On his car.
Are you getting the gun? Diane Rogers,
Ms. Payne, did you make this spreadsheet out?
Ms. Glover did.
Nice. It's exactly perfect. What we were thinking about,
exactly.
Something like that. But even better than what we anticipated.
That would be perfect.
That gives you a fast overview of just where it is.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we would want to see, at our meetings and with, the complaints and the backup. I guess the only other thing, Ms. Payne, we've covered the compensation, is on the back where we talk about use of employees or designees. I guess we need to redo that wording a little bit. Instead of taking the word out may, because we want it's not his option.
Oh, yeah.
He shall utilize the service. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that we make sure that from the get-go that all of this is followed, so that we don't get off on the wrong track.
Yeah.
The typing is red. Are you approving that as is?
I'm changing it right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it says, shall utilize the service of an office employee for any necessary paperwork that is required. Right. Okay? However, she shall perform all of the services which are the subject of this contract. Now, has the option of delivering, that we're going to take that out. Because there's not going to be an option.
We are going to
all of everything. I guess you could just add all mailings will be done by the office. Yeah.
So once we hire this person, this unicorn, who sits down? Does Ms. Payne sit down and explain the facts of life to that person?
Yes.
Good. Mm-hmm. Okay.
What were you saying about the show?
It's on Article 4.
Yeah, I'm seeing that.
Okay. You have the blank, their name, and then shall rather than may utilize the services.
And then under
the last sentence,
On the different
all mailings done from the office.
Yes.
on the different forms that are sent out. If you look at page 101, the code enforcement policy and procedures, the one that is not listed in there is number, is the one that says statement of violation and request for hearing. Okay? It needs to come after, my correct, Mrs. Payne, after number two, after the notice of violation. Okay, if you look at this general operating procedures, this form here where it says statement of violation and request for hearing was left off of this. Oh, so it needs to come after number two. Am I right, Mrs. Payne?
I think so.
Yeah. And then after that, he has a notice of hearing and so on and so on. My story, and I'm sticking to it. Anything else? Mr. Young, what do you think? Anything more to add?
Which
one?
Which one? 18-5.
Okay.
What section?
He hasn't said yet.
I think what I had in my notes was under the same section, which would be 3.2, establishment membership of code enforcement board or a special magistrate. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And probably can handle the establishment of a code enforcement officer and temporary appointment of one when one wasn't available. You probably put that information there. Otherwise, I think that was everything I had. It looked like you covered it pretty well.
Okay. That would be a number two under A under that. Because you got the appointment of the codes enforcement board, and then it talks, number one talks about the code enforcement board, and then number two could be a temporary code enforcement officer.
Oh, yeah.
Is that where you want to put that?
I don't know if I got that specific. The 3.1, which is code enforcement board. 3.2, establishment membership of code enforcement board or special magistrate. And then I would do the 3.3.
Oh, okay.
Oh, add a section.
Okay.
And what check
did
everyone
in? Establishment code enforcement officer division.
Okay.
Okay. And here 3.1. We'll add this. 3.3.
Okay.
Got it.
This is to the temporary.
And under that last session, we could also put the provision in there for temporary enforcement.
Yeah.
But the town council is authorized to appoint an interim code enforcement officer and the code enforcement officer position being occupied. As we talk about code enforcement officer all over these ordinances, but I noticed there's nowhere where the town officially is establishing a code enforcement officer position.
I'd like to ask something completely unrelated. Well, not completely, but somewhat. You know, there was a fire at the brush store. Right now, there's a couple of top windows that have been knocked out. You can see a bowl of fruit up there, and I'm sure there's God knows what going through the top floor, whatever's left of it. At what point in time can we move forward, or should we move forward, with making a demand on the owners or whomever to start cleaning it up?
Just for discussion, because you can't take action on it right now. But it's an example.
Oh.
You've got to deal with you have to have a lot of the insurance company. One, any fire investigation will be complete. Insurance companies have their investigation complete. Because, and then when the insurance company is going to provide funds for the cleanup and or repair and or tear down of the building. I would say you probably look at somewhere between 30 and 60 days before you can give them a notice. I don't know if we've ever come across that in any dealing with municipalities. I have to look back at some of the other ordinances. It's actually a reasonable time that for the homeowners or the property owners that would be able to have insurance money in order to conduct whatever cleanup or.
I would be surprised if there's insurance on it, personally, but, yeah, I guess that's...
I think that would be very doubtful. It's hard to get insurance on it.
Well, that's what someone else has said about a mortgage insurance. I can't believe anybody would even give them a mortgage on it, let alone insure the place. I mean, it was a fire trap, I think, I'm told to begin with. So, it happened, what, about 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
So if we wait maximum of six, I mean, in the meantime, okay, the grass is growing, the junk is picking up. Are we required just to kind of leave it the way it is?
No. I believe under your ordinance, what you would do is you'd send them the courtesy notice of all the issues and see which ones are resolved, and if they're not, when it's brought before the code enforcement board, the code enforcement board can take an accountability if the property owner showed up and explained to the board, look, we're going to get this fixed, but the insurance company hasn't issued the check for the money yet. Those are the type of things the code enforcement board then can take in consideration and decide when a fine should be applied and when they should allow more time to get it fixed. I mean, that's their purpose, to hear both sides of the story. And to take whatever action may be necessary is just in order to accomplish what you want. But as far as violations go, I would think after 30 days, if you have a violation, then you move forward with enforcing the code.
I know we've had several violations in the past, and several times I believe Mr. Rogers had been out there, and it's never ending. Well, I guess we'll just give it the 30 days.
If you'll remember, there was a house on 20, okay, just, it sits on Mirror Lake, okay, but right on 20 that burned down, gosh, a couple years ago now. That house sat there for a very long time before it finally was removed. Now it's just like an empty lot with a foundation on it, but it took a long time, and I don't know if that was an insurance issue or not. You know, I mean, it was a nice home, but that sat there a long time before it. I want to say almost a year.
I always thought it was the family just wasn't getting around to cleaning it up.
Yeah, and it was my understanding that the hole inside of the brush store was pretty much.
The roof
has caved in on that side. Yeah, so it's pretty bad. Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Yeah. I guess we'll have to wait a while and see what happens.
Well, there's one other point to be made, too. If there's concern that you have a public nuisance, a safety issue, then it may be something that the town needs to put on for this now. Mm-hmm. You have a right in the inspector, perhaps as the one who got a fire marshal, and you can see stuff with your own eyes. There's nothing that says that, you know, once you have a structural fire, I believe your building inspector can get involved as well as the fire marshal. If they deem those buildings to be uninhabitable or uninhabitable or unsafe, you can start to take action now, because you do have a duty to the public to prevent it from becoming a nuisance that could potentially allow someone to get hurt.
Yeah, I had been told, can't verify it, that it was deemed unsafe and uninhabitable. And the day, I think it was after the fire, I saw the people there, I guess, removing some belongings. Nobody's been back since. And I think it's definitely going to become a nuisance and a danger.
It is a nuisance. I understand why they didn't come and get the...
Yeah, they had a police line around it, and as well as, I think it was a fire line as well. But... well, we'll need to see that, Mrs. Payne, about moving ahead with it before it becomes more serious.
Chief was at the brush store last Friday, and there, I guess it was the owner, was there, and Chief Wilburn was talking to somebody that was there, so I don't know what that conversation was.
They had to get clearance from the fire marshal to get some of their stuff out of the house, and the chief was over there with him while he was doing that, because it is dangerous.
So if the fire marshal deems that it can't be repaired, it's damaged too bad, then why can't we do it such a serving notice?
I mean, I can't see anybody rebuilding it. I mean, they weren't doing much to it when they were living in it as far as anything on the outside.
Because they'll have to respond to the notice, and then we'll know where the building's
right.
at.
Yeah.
We don't know anything right now. We don't have any information. But
let's work with that.
We can get easily by calling the fire marshal.
Well, I thought the fire marshal had already been there and had already turned it back up to the owner.
But we need to know what their findings were. Was it deemed...
Our chief would probably know.
What would be the correct procedure as far as contacting the fire marshal or to find out what the status is on that property? The fire chief over here, and who should do that?
Can we just contact Chief Warren?
I'll call the chief when I get home and ask him.
And then what I would need the other would be to reach out to the county, especially to the known department, and let them know you had a structural fire and you have concerns about the safety of the structure. They have a director of emergency management, and the building official that will probably be willing to go out and conduct an inspection and notify you what status
is. Good. All right. That's good. That gives us
a... ...in and of itself result in some type of posting by the county or others, you know, that it's unsafe, and then you take steps from there.
Okay.
But you need...
Okay.
You
can be... Yes, Mr. Connor.
Please don't take this the wrong way.
Right.
It can be a layperson's opinion. You look at it and say, right. Wow, that's uninhabitable.
Yeah, that's why I asked. Yeah.
We need the professionals to go in and say what needs to be done. And then, of course, I mean, once you notify them, of course, the homeowner is notified, then the town can work. You are the homeowners who are working with the insurance company to see what's going on. You'll get more information, then you can take it from there and further away.
You know, there seems to be quite a few buildings around that would appear to me anyway to be uninhabitable and somewhat of a safety issue. The ones that I'm thinking about pretty much are one story. In something like this, where there might be a greater danger, if they don't do anything, is the burden on the town to do something?
Yes. I mean, when it comes from the viewpoint of public safety, the homeowner is not going to take the appropriate actions necessary to secure the home and post it and notice it so that people don't go and walk inside, check things out, the second floor fall on their head because of fire damage. And the town does have an obligation and responsibility. This is why I'm saying we probably should reach out to the building inspector, see what their procedure would be, come out and check it out. And so we'll follow up, we'll make sure they're okay with that happening, and make sure their investigation is complete. You know, we'll have to do their investigation. And then once you have those folks out there, have them appropriately mark the building, you know, whether it's tape or a big notice that says uninhabitable, do not come in, whatever you gotta do. And then the code enforcement officer or interim, whoever it is, can then send out the appropriate courtesy notice and procedures are required.
And then after, let's say it's taken, if we have to take it down, do we own the property?
We have that house right over here by the Bravo store that I never even knew was there until they were widening 20. And that poor little thing is just falling in. I mean, it's...
That's necrosis.
Yes. But that's dangerous. That's dangerous.
Well, we'll have a couple on our plate, won't we?
It does look like a hazard from the road.
Oh my goodness, yes.
And you couldn't see it before all those trees.
No, I had no idea it was there.
She had made a comment one time about when funding was done, about maybe putting her offices or something in that area, so she might tear it down and put something else.
And I've heard to the grapevine something to that effect, but...
Anyway,
that's all
for us. I just want to clarify, so the council agrees that they're going to utilize this sample spreadsheet? Mm-hmm. Did the council agree that they're going to increase to $400?
We did not.
Did we all agree to
that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay. I believe there's some ambiguity going on here.
Yeah.
This is what we're trying. You're agreeing here at the workshop, but it'll have
but
to be.
But it'll have to be. That's right.
Good point.
Yeah, it has to be voted. Okay,
anything else?
Oops,
sorry. Go ahead.
I just want to clarify on the operating procedures. Number one, is the deadline only 2 weeks for the courtesy notice?
Courtesy.
Yeah, isn't that
what's
on there now?
Yeah.
So
make sure.
Okay. Okay. Done. Good night. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice seeing everybody. Thank you, Mr. Young.
Being an independent contractor, when I'm in your facility, when I go to a doctor's office and do the testing that I do, I am under all of his rules and regulations. I am not exempt because I'm an independent contractor and following their guidelines. So if that person's here, they're following your guidelines.
Right. So you
have jurisdiction.
Right. I just can't tell him what time to show up.
This is in here that he's got the latitude to set his own time. But that you can change that, that maybe something will look to change.
You might want to inject 4 days.
I wouldn't need to, though. Yeah.
Maybe one day a week he needs to be here.
But, I mean, as far as, like, hourly telling him what he can and can't do on an hourly basis, I can't do that.
No, you can't. Because you can set up when you want to have a meeting and you expect to draw.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.